Okay, so I think we can start this evening's talk. Tonight I'm going to talk about attachment. This is one of the kind of the old favorite subjects for Buddhism, which Buddhism always talks about. But it's interesting, I always find in my life as a monk that people often have, even this kind of subject, people often have a vague understanding of what this actually means. And sometimes I hear people saying things like, I'm a Buddhist, I must not be attached. I shouldn't be attached because I'm a Buddhist. And I often think to myself, well, how can you... It's not a very wise way of thinking that I'm a Buddhist, I shouldn't be attached. Because most of the time we have no choice in the matter. It's not as if we can choose, I shall be attached or I shouldn't be attached. It doesn't work like that. It's the nature of existence, the nature of ordinary human beings, that you have attachments. So if you think to yourself, I shouldn't be attached, I must not be attached, all you're really doing is you're creating a sense of guilt and a sense of shame. Oh, I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm being a bad Buddhist if I think like this, if I have attachments. So you can see how useless that actually is and how it actually leads to negative mind states, it leads to negative perceptions about yourself, rather than having any positive impact on your life as a Buddhist. So it doesn't really work that way. You have to have attachments. This is part and parcel of being a human being. So this is one of the things I often hear people say. Another thing is people often say, oh, you know, Bhante, if I don't have any attachments, I won't be able to look after the people around me. How can I look after my children? How can I look after my husband and wife? How can I look after my parents? How can I look after anybody unless I have some attachment to these people? But the reality is that, first of all, you're not going to be able to get rid of your attachments anyway overnight. It takes a long, long time. It takes a lot of practice. So it's really, it's a kind of pie in the sky anyway, and it's not something you need to worry about. But the other thing is that attachments tend to delude us. It reduces our ability to look after other people because there is a desire, often is also part of aversion that comes with attachment. So if you have attachment, it actually makes it worse. So it's actually the other way around that people often think. They think, oh, I have to have attachments, otherwise I can't look after people. Actually, you shouldn't have attachments. You should not have attachments if you want to look after people properly. And that includes your family, your children, your husband and wife, your parents, your friends, whoever it is, it's always the same thing. Less attachments, the better it is. But of course, there is still a lot of truth in the saying in Buddhism that people say, I shouldn't be attached, of course, there is a reason why they say that. And the reason is because they understand at a certain level that attachments lead to suffering. And this, of course, is an important understanding. This is something, again, which is a very important and basic teaching of Buddhism. And we can see why that is, why attachments always must lead to suffering. And the reason is, if we hold on to things in the world, whatever it is, whether it's our own bodies or material things or whatever it is, all of these things are, according to the Buddha's teaching, subject to change. They're going to be altered. They're going to disappear. And if they don't disappear, they're going to take a different form from what they have now. And of course, if you are attached to something and that thing changes or it even disappears altogether, what happens? You suffer because the thing that you're holding on to changes. And this is pretty obvious. I think we can see that in our lives, everybody. It's quite obvious that this is what's happening if we have attachments. And that is a very important starting point, because once you understand that, your reaction is not, I shouldn't be attached. Your reaction rather is, how can I move to get rid of these attachments, or at least reduce them, so that the suffering is less when impermanence comes around and tears these things away from us, which eventually it must do. So to understand what's happening here, first of all, one of the basic things is to understand how attachments arise. What is the mechanism, the psychological mechanism through which attachments come into being? And as with so many things in Buddhism, it starts off with the fact that as human beings, we have feelings. And these feelings can usually be divided into two aspects, and that is pleasant feelings and unpleasant feelings. And pretty much all our experience can be subdivided into those two things. Now, because the world can be divided into pleasant and unpleasant, it follows as natural consequence from that that we are going to have craving, because it is in accordance with nature that we want to have the pleasant and we want to avoid the unpleasant things. So once you have feeling, you must also have craving. These things go together here. Now, once you have craving, that craving itself is obviously an unpleasant state. So what you want to do is you want to satisfy this craving. Now, in the world, you will always find certain things that tend to satisfy you, tend to make you feel fulfilled, tend to make you feel good about yourself, things that give rise to pleasant feelings, things that help you avoid unpleasant feelings. And these things that help us in this sense, these are, of course, the things that we attach to. So from feeling, from craving, must arise attachment. So you can see what's going on here. As long as we have craving, as long as we attach to our feelings and we take these feelings to be something important, we are going to have attachment. So there's no choice in the matter here. So because there is no choice in the matter, to go around saying, oh, I must not be attached, is not going to work, is not going to be beneficial. In fact, it's going to make you feel bad about yourself. Why is it that why do we crave in response to feelings? And the reason for this, essentially, comes back to one some of the very profound understandings that the Buddha had, and that is that we have this sense of self inside of us. And one of the most important aspects of that sense of self is the feeling that we are in control. We can control our world. We can make sure that we have nice feelings, good feelings, pleasant feelings, and that we can avoid the unpleasant feelings. This is one of the most essential aspects of the sense of self, is this perception inside of us that we are in control, we're in charge. We can actually control the world around us to make sure that we feel nice things and we avoid the bad things. And of course, this sense of self, and the Buddha spoke about this in many places, about how it gives rise to the sense of being in charge, being in control, this is a very fundamental part of human existence. It's not something that you can wish away. It's not something you can say, I will not have this. You have to have this sense of self unless you are very highly spiritually developed, unless you are a stream enter or you are fully awakened. You're going to have this sense of self. So because of that, because the sense of self is so fundamental to our existence, to who we are, you have no choice but to attach. From the sense of self comes the idea that I'm in charge, I can control things. Because you think you can control things, you will crave, because craving arises as a result of the fact that you think you can control things. If you really can't control things, craving doesn't make any sense. And then from that craving arises the attachment to those things that satisfies the craving in your life. So this is like the basic mechanism for how attachments happen. And I'm going to talk about later on about how we actually can get rid of these attachments and how we can sort of enter a path to reduce them, make them less problematic. But first of all, I want to give some examples from ordinary life how attachment happens and the consequences that it often has and where we can find attachments in our lives. And one very obvious place where we have attachments is often related to our work. We work hard, we pursue a career perhaps, we get promotions, maybe we have a nice good salary and we find that the salary increases over time. And often we identify with our job. We think, this is us, I am this person who is having success professionally, who is doing well, who is having a good salary or whatever. This is me, this I am. And it gives you a sense of identity. It gives you a sense of social standing. It gives you a sense of being maybe praised by your colleagues or by your friends because they think highly about you according to who you are in your professional life. And I have seen so many people in my life who identify with who they are professionally. And very often you can see that when they get old and they retire, they become pensioners, and still they keep on talking about, oh, how wonderful it was when I was working in that position, how important I was, and they can't really let go of that person they were when they were, whatever work they were doing before. So there is attachment there, there's attachment to the sense of who they are in connection with their work. And I think this happens very frequently among people. And of course, what happens if you get fired, if you think that your position, your social position, who you are, is so important in accordance to your work? What happens if you get fired? What happens if the company has to sack lots of people because the economic times are going down? You feel bad, you feel terrible about yourself. And you always read about a few people who, when the economic times are going bad, they jump off buildings and do all kinds of crazy things because their identity is so completely and fully tied up with that job, with that sense of being successful, with that sense of having a great salary, with a sense of basically the whole social life is tied up with this identity with their job. So this is a classic example of how we attach to things and the consequences that it can sometimes lead to if those attachments are very strong. Yeah. Another area that we attach to is often our homes, our houses. And I see people very often, they spend a lot of time building up a beautiful house for themselves. And of course, a house is a place where we are protected from the world outside. It's a place where we spend much time with our family. It's a place where we enjoy entertainments and all kinds of pleasures. It's a place where basically we have a good time, particularly if we have a good family life. Of course, sometimes people don't have a good family life, in which case it can be a negative thing. But if you have a good family life, then it's usually for most people a place you get attached to because of all the pleasures you have in that place. And again, one of the things you also find with your home, that very often people put a lot of effort into making their house just like an extension of themselves. They decorate it in this way, they buy furniture, which they like in a particular fashion, and they do all these kind of things, and they feel that their home, in a sense, is an extension of their personality, of who they are. And of course, because of that, they also find you have great attachments to your house. And if something goes wrong, if your house burns down, if you have to sell it because you can't afford to have this particular house anymore, again, I've seen so many times people grieving and lamenting the fact that they have to get rid of their house. Again, there's a sense of attachment there to this particular house. But of course, some of the greatest attachments in life are the attachments that we have to other people. And these are the areas which are, now we're getting to maybe the core, really important attachments. And again, the reason why other people are so important to us, very often it has to do with psychological things. The people we like are people who are kind to us, who maybe praise us, who have compassion towards us, who understand us. People we can speak to, and we feel a sense of relief when we speak to these people. And that's why we often have very strong attachments to people around us, particularly if you maybe have a spouse you've been living with for decades and decades and decades. You get so used to each other, you're so much part of each other's lives. It's almost sometimes like you become one person, two people becoming one person, and it becomes very hard to imagine living apart from this person. And of course there, if this other person almost becomes part of you, of course it's going to be painful if they divorce you, if they die, if they don't want to have anything more to do with you, obviously it's going to be very, very painful. And I've seen, even in monastic life, I have seen people attaching to others. And I remember in particular when I first started off in monastic life, I remember Ajahn Chah, the teacher of Ajahn Brahm, and many other of the Western teachers. He passed away. That was in 1991, I think. And I remember some of these Western teachers, very senior teachers, teachers who have been around practicing for maybe 20 years, maybe even more. And they said what a great sense of loss it was to lose Ajahn Chah. And that was, I thought that was interesting. Even, you know, you would have thought maybe when you've been living monastic life for so long, but sometimes these attachments are very deep-seated. And of course, if the person that you are attached to is somebody who is very special, somebody who is very wise, who has a lot of compassion, who has a lot of wisdom, somebody you can rely on always to give you sound advice, to move you in the right direction, that sort of person, of course, you're going to attach, because these are the people who can help you solve the problems in your life in a very deep sense. And you find also, which I thought was quite fascinating, when you read the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, this is the sutta or the discourse of the Buddha, which describes the time when just before the Buddha's passing away, and it describes the funeral of the Buddha, first of all his death, his funeral, and all the happenings around this. And on his deathbed, and just after he died, you find all these beings, all these people, also devas, all kind of beings being present, and they were all crying and wailing. The Buddha has passed away. The light of the world is no more. And they were crying and crying, crying, because the Buddha had disappeared. And of course, you can see why. You know, the Buddha is the light of the world. That's how it's described here. Of course, the light of the world is somebody who shows you what you cannot see yourself. Somebody who points out what you cannot see. They light up the dark corners of your mind, the dark corners of your life, and point out with wisdom those things that you cannot see for yourself. So of course, when somebody like that dies, it has a very, very powerful effect on you. And I remember even the Venerable Ananda, who was the Buddha's chief attendant 20 years for 20 years before he died. Even Venerable Ananda, who was supposed to be a stream mentor, somebody very close to enlightenment, even he was crying at the funeral of the Buddha, saying, lamenting, oh, he's passed away. How am I going to keep going when the Buddha has passed away, essentially? So it is a very profound and deep thing, the kind of attachments that we sometimes have to people around us, particularly those people who give us a sense of ease, a sense of comfort, a sense of understanding, and a sense of wisdom. And then, of course, there is the attachments that we have to ourselves, to our own body and mind. And again, this is very easy to see those attachments. You see, you look yourself in the mirror, and you see how you get more wrinkled, how your hair grays, how your hairline recedes, and you think, oh dear, what's happening to me? Or you see you're gaining weight and all these things. And of course, we don't like this because we identify with our bodies. We think, this is me. This is how I present myself to the world. And how I present myself to the world is declining very rapidly. I don't look the same as I used to before. And people often find this difficult. And that is why they use all kinds of cosmetics and all kinds of operations to make sure that your body looks nice and beautiful as long as possible. So again, that is an attachment we have. And lastly, of course, we attach to our mind. And this is the most profound attachment that we have as human beings, because your mind is what, in the final analysis, we all take to be ourselves. This is the real you, the final you inside of you. And when that goes wrong, when you get depressed, or you have some kind of mental problems one way or another, it is very, very difficult to deal with, precisely because it touches the very core of who we think we are. And very often you find that one of the worst aspects of getting depressed is that you get even more depressed, because this is about you. You are feeling bad about yourself. And one of the tricks, therefore, to get out of the problem of depression is to say to yourself, actually, depression is okay. This is what happens in life. What do you expect? Of course, you get depressed sometimes. And I remember it was Ajahn Sumedho, I think, who once said to a lady who was complaining to him about depression, he said to her, well, what's wrong with depression? What's wrong with being depressed? In other words, don't be so concerned about it. And when you take away some of that concern, then some of the problem also disappears. So that is just an overview of the problems in life, and how we tend to attach to things and the problems that it gives rise to. In all the cases I've been talking about, you will see that the attachment arises because the object of attachment gives a sense of pleasure to us. It gives a sense of happiness, and that is why we grasp these things so strongly here. So the question then arises, what can we do about these attachments? How can we overcome them? What is the kind of the things that we should think of? And of course, the answer to that is, first of all, that we have to create a refuge for ourselves, which is somewhere else, apart from these attachments that we have. And a lot of the attachments what we have, as I just mentioned, are in the world around us. The concern, our jobs, our sense of who we are in relation to other people, our bodies, and all these things. So what we have to do then is we have to look inwards rather than outwards. And that is where we can find this respite from attachments. And so what we need to do is we need to beautify ourselves internally. We need to find a source of happiness and contentment inside ourselves rather than outside. And when you can grow that sense of beautiful contentment, happiness, peace inside of yourself, you start to find that you release this dependence on external things. It doesn't matter so much anymore. If you feel good about yourself, it is still sad when somebody passes away. It is still terrible when you lose your job. But it's not as bad as it used to be, because you have something else in your life, something else that is even more precious than these external things, the fame, the blame, the praise, and all these other things. So it's really a path of beautifying the mind, of making the mind more bright, of having an internal source of happiness. This is the way we gradually, stage by stage, we can overcome these external attachments. And one way of looking at this path is to regard it as a kind of ladder of attachments. Because as I said before, as long as you are an ordinary person, you have to have attachments. It's something you can't avoid. So because of that, we actually, in a sense, use attachment to our benefit to practice this path. And it's possible to view the attachments as like a ladder of attachments, whereby you climb up this ladder. And as you go up the ladder, you grasp a higher type of attachment. And as you grasp the higher type of attachment, you can reduce your grip on the attachments lower down. So it's like you're moving up the rungs of a ladder. And more beautiful, you substitute a better attachment for the bad ones that you had before. And gradually you can move away from the suffering that attachments give rise to. And the way this works is, imagine yourself when you first started becoming interested in spiritual life, maybe when you first started to see yourself as a Buddhist, was interested in Buddhism. Then what happens then is that you tend to attach a little bit to the idea, I am a spiritual person, I want to practice goodness in the world, I want to do something positive, I want to have compassion, I want to have loving kindness, I want to be a peaceful person. And you attach a little bit to that identity as somebody good. And that's a good thing. Don't worry about that kind of attachment, because that is precisely the sort of attachment that will lead you onwards. If you regard yourself as a good person, as somebody who is a Buddhist or a spiritual person or whatever, it means that you will incline to do those things that a spiritual person does. So it's a good attachment. It pushes you in the right way. And of course, you can see that when you have this attachment to being a spiritual person, what happens at the same time is that you release this idea of yourself as being a successful business person, as being somebody who has a nice house or a nice car, as somebody who has whatever worldly accomplishments you have become less important, because your sense of identity now is more tied up with being a spiritual person, somebody who does good things, somebody who does what is right in the world. So you can see, because of that, because you're moving away from the attachments of the material world, all these things, it means that you are less susceptible now to the suffering that comes from that attachment, because you're finding your happiness somewhere else, you're attaching somewhere else. So this is the benefit now. You can see how you're moving slowly up this ladder. Of course, This doesn't mean that you have given up all attachments in that material world. There's still going to be attachments there, but they are lessened. They're not as strong as they used to be before. Then, as you start practicing the spiritual life, of course, the next step usually is then you start, okay, I'm going to be a good person. So you start practicing morality, you start practicing kindness, maybe you decide to undertake the five precepts, etc. And as you do that, you are again grasping a higher rung on that ladder of attachments. You're grasping something more refined than you were doing before. And as you are holding on to the precepts, to kindness, and I think it's important to realize that there is an element of holding on there. It's not possible to have a determination to be kind. It's not possible to have a determination to keep the five precepts without a sense of grasping. There has to be a little bit of grasping there, at least initially. So there is a sense of attachment to those five precepts, just by the fact that we undertake them. And of course, as you do that, now you start to see the benefits of the practice. You start to see that you find a sense of happiness, of contentment through practicing those five precepts, through practicing kindness. And as you find that you increase in happiness and contentment, you start to not hold on so much anymore to your identity as a Buddhist or as a spiritual person. Because now you're moving towards a mind which has a sense of satisfaction within itself. You feel good about yourself. You feel that your life is worthwhile. You feel that I'm doing well in the world. I'm actually not a bad person after all. And slowly you're changing your view of yourself to a more wholesome view, to a more wholesome understanding of who you are as a person. And this becomes then the next rung up that ladder. You don't hold on to your identity so much anymore, of a spiritual person, and even less your identity as a person who has material success, whatever that might be in the world. Then the next step up the spiritual ladder is that you start to do meditation practice, and you start to do maybe loving kindness, compassion, having a sense of peace in the world. And initially, again, you have to grasp onto that meditation practice to some extent. It isn't always easy. We all know how difficult it can be to get the meditation going. So you decide, okay, every day I'm going to do 10 minutes of meditation practice, at least to get started. Maybe not even every day, every 2 days, every 3 days, whatever it is. But we hold on to that because we decide, we make a determination that I'm going to do this. And of course, as you do that, as you start practicing meditation, you find that gradually over time, your mind does become more purified. You have less anger. You have less problems with the people around you. You have less powerful and strong desires in your life. Your mind becomes more clear. Your mind becomes more beautiful. You have a greater sense of contentment and happiness as you do this practice. I recently listened to a talk by a lady who's been a member of the Buddha Society here for a long time. And she spoke about her practice of loving kindness. And she spoke basically about how it had changed her life, doing loving kindness meditation over many, many, many years. Every day, sometimes sitting for an hour or even more, sometimes perhaps less. But gradually develop in this kind of practice. And she explained how it had changed her life completely. And how now she looked upon other people in a completely different way than from what she used to do. And I remember she said one thing. She said that, well, when I was young, she said, I'd never thought I would be able to give a public talk because I was absolutely terrified completely of public speaking. But now, because of her practice, because of her ability to see people in a positive way, she said it didn't even bother her to give a public talk, even here in this Nolamara Center. And this is the kind of thing, the kind of benefit you have. You feel secure because you have a sense of happiness coming from inside of you. You don't worry so much about what the world outside of you thinks or anybody else thinks. Doesn't really matter because you have a sense of independence inside of you. So this is the next step up that ladder. And when that meditation starts to take off, when you find that your mind is nice and pure, that you have a sense of well-wishing to the people around you, Then you can start to loosen the grip on morality, on being kind. Why? Because when a sense of compassion comes from inside of you, you don't really have to force kindness anymore. You don't have to hold on to those five precepts. They become like a natural extension of a pure mind, of a beautiful mind. So again, you can see how it loosens by grasping on something higher. Again, you're loosening something lower on those rungs. You're attaching to something higher up on this thing here. An interesting thing, of course, is that as you move up this ladder, there are several things happening here. But one important thing that happens is that the attachment that you have to those higher rungs are much less than the attachments they used to have. You become much less vulnerable as a person to the ups and downs of life. It's not as if you have to hold on so tightly to things like meditation as you did to things in the material world. These things are much more easily, much more softly held, and you identify with these things in a much softer and much gentler way. But it's still a thing that you have to hold on to some extent. And eventually, of course, the time when you eventually can overcome attachment altogether, that is only the time when you have deep insight, deep understanding into this thing which is non-self business in Buddhism. And that's what I was started off by saying initially in the beginning, that the root cause of why we have attachments in the first place is the sense of self that we have inside of us. This sense that we are in charge, that we can control the world, that we can control things which are in reality completely outside of our control. And it's only by understanding and seeing that actually this is just an illusion, only then can we overcome attachments completely. And that is the next step after meditation, when you can have that sort of deep insight and seeing these things. So it is no easy matter to get rid of attachments altogether. It's a very, very profound thing. It's something that you have to practice usually for a long period of time before you can get to that stage. And even then, it is not an easy matter to do. So you can see now why this idea, just go around thinking that, if I get attached, I'm a bad Buddhist, I'm not a truly spiritual person if I get attached, I must not get attached. This is actually the wrong way of looking at this. It's good to know that attachments lead to suffering, because if you know that attachments lead to suffering, it gives you the motivation, it gives you the push to practice, to get rid of these things. That's an important part of the path. But then you don't think, I must not be attached. Rather you think, how can I use these attachments in a wise way? How can I turn it around in such a way that it can actually aid me on the spiritual path? Attach to something positive. Place, identify yourself as a good person, as a spiritual person, as somebody who wants to do good in this world, and don't identify too much with the material things. And then you're moving slowly, gradually, in the right way. So that is the answer to the question of why we should not really think in the sense of, I must not be attached. The other thing that I promised to talk about at the beginning is this idea that people have, if I don't have attachment, I won't be able to look after people. I won't look after my kids. They will just go do whatever they want and nothing really happen. I won't have any love and any compassion, understanding for them. How can I get rid of all my attachments? This is not right. The Buddhist path is missing something. There's something not quite right about the Buddhist path in this sense. But again, this is a misunderstanding. And first of all, as I've just tried to explain, is that it's a long thing to get rid of all attachments. And the chances that you are actually going to be able to get rid of those attachments so completely that they're completely gone are basically zero. Because that means you are a fully enlightened, fully awakened person. And the chances of getting there are, to be honest, very, very small. You can maybe go a long way on the path, but full awakening is something extraordinarily profound. So, first of all, it's misguided to even think in those terms, because the attachments are always going to be there. But secondly, it's important to understand that attachments are a negative thing. Because attachments imply desire for those people, desire for those things that you're attached to. And because it implies desire, it implies a sense of selfishness. It implies because you are attached, your happiness depends on the other person. It is an aspect of selfishness there in the attachments. And because there is this aspect of selfishness, it means that when you want to guide this person, you want to help them, you want to have compassion towards them, it's not a pure form of compassion. It's a distorted kind of compassion. And you're not actually able to see what is of the greatest benefit for this person. Rather, you tend to see what is of benefit both to you and the other person. There's a mix there. There's a lack of clarity in the mind. And of course, if we are attached, we also know very well how easy it is to get angry. If the object of attachment doesn't kind of behave according to how we think it should behave, we get upset. You know what it's like with children if they don't do what they're supposed to do. It's very easy to get upset because the children, again, are somebody who is very, very close to us. So again, that anger, of course, is a negative thing. Once you're angry, it clouds the mind, it distorts you. It makes you do things which later on you regret. I shouldn't have done that. That was stupid. I was angry at the time. And because of that, you end up regretting the things that you do. So the point I'm making here is that attachments actually are negative because they push you away. You lose your ability to see the benefit of that person that you are attached to. You're looking basically at yourself to some extent rather than just the benefit of that person. So because of that, you realize very quickly that if you can loosen those attachments, if you can have more sense of clarity in the mind, more sense of equanimity, then you actually start to be able to look at that person in a different way. And you can start to look at the true, what is really beneficial for this person. What is true compassion? What is true wisdom in this particular case? What is actually for their benefit and their well-being rather than my benefit and my well-being? So please don't be afraid. Don't think that you are going to lose your children or your spouse or your parents or your friends because you haven't got enough attachment. That is the wrong way of looking at it. The less attachment you have, the better your relationships will be. That is basically what it comes down to. So that is essentially the talk. Just to recap very briefly, remind yourself, always think that attachment is a path. It is a path whereby you allow yourself to attach to those things that are really important in life, attach to those things that bring spiritual progress, rather than attach to those things that give rise to pure suffering in life. Attachment always, there's always going to be an aspect of suffering with attachment. So at least make sure that you attach to those things that lead away from suffering rather than to more suffering in the future.